Hillary Martin and Sarah DeSantis are two organic farmers from the Inner Vale of Burlington, Vermont, and Free Radio Burlington was lucky enough to speak to them while they're on a tour of the West Bank, visiting farmers there and talking about the impacts of the Israeli government's occupation.
Live from Palestine. So, Sarah, you wanted to go first?
Yes.
What were the impacts of the wall that you saw when you were in Tokaram? Particularly, what were the impacts on farmers?
Well, unfortunately, the wall has already been built in Tokaram, and in some places it's an actual wall, 25 feet tall, and also razor wire and ditches in front of that wall, with video cameras on top of the wall very regularly, and also watchtowers within the wall. And many farmers have had their land confiscated from that. And are basically their farmland borders a military wall where they're watched constantly, where quite often there is blocked access to the land, even on the side of the wall that Palestine is on. And of course, Israel is grabbing up land, a lot more land with this wall, or security border, or security fence, as they call it. In one region, there's many towns surrounding Tukram. One town we went to, we met a farmer, and this was it was a fence there. And again, razor wire all over the place. You can't get anywhere near the fence. And he had 5,000 olive trees, and because of the construction of the wall, he lost 3,000 of his trees were uprooted. And the rest of his trees we could actually see from his house. They were just meters away. And but he can't get to them. He has to walk 5 kilometers to get to a gate in the fence to be able to walk to his trees. So he walks 5 kilometers to the gate and then has to walk another 5 kilometers to get back. And then, you know, he has to get permission, this farmer and his family have to get permission to harvest olives from the Israeli military. And if he gets permission, no vehicles are allowed to enter. So getting 2,000 trees worth of olives back and forth from a tiny gate and having to walk 10 kilometers or have a donkey with you is almost impossible. And this farmer, you know, they have 122 people in their extended family, and that's who cultivates all these olives. And unfortunately, you know, this year was the first year he had to buy olive oil.
Could you also explain maybe the importance of the olive harvest and of olives?
Olive trees here have been here for generations. You know, we've seen olive trees that are over 400 years old. So generations and generations have gotten their olives and their olive oil, which is really the lifeblood of the people here. It's their culture. Without the olive tree, if you destroy the olive tree, you're destroying Palestinian culture. In rural villages, life totally revolves around the cycle of the olive tree, harvesting, pruning, cover cropping underneath the olive trees. All of this is done in cycles, and if you take that away from the Palestinians, you take away their culture and also their economic livelihood, which has been hard recently anyways because of checkpoints. Palestinians haven't even been able to get the olive oil out of the country or out of their communities to be able to sell it. So it's been a constant struggle even before the wall, and the wall is just making it a lot worse.
What are people's outlooks on the wall, in particularly now Boudris?
Well, just to say first that unfortunately the wall has been constructed. You know, Kapilya is a town that's on the Green Line that is completely encircled by the wall, and then you go up north to follow the Green Line to Tulkarm, and then you go to the towns in the Jenin area. And that whole area has the wall built. And as you see the wall being built, you also see the resistance being built to counter the wall. And now we're here in Boudris, which is actually south of Kikilia on the Green Line. And the resistance here is so amazing. There's demonstrations every few days against the wall, which unfortunately right now we're in a little town called Boudris. It's a beautiful, well, not unfortunately that we're here, but unfortunately the wall's going to be built here. It's a town of 1,200 people, and the resistance is so strong here. All the political factions have come out to work together to stop the construction of the wall. And already trees have been uprooted, and you can see this huge swath of land that has already been bulldozed to make way for the wall. But the Israeli government has not actually been able to construct the wall thus far because there has been so much resistance here. You know, neighboring towns, the neighboring town, Nevin, is due to lose 98% of its land, 97% of its land from the construction of the wall. That means almost all its olive groves. We just went to visit another town called Deir Balut. They're going to lose 98% of their land, which isn't just their olive groves, it's also all their wheat fields, which, of course, they use their wheat, they save their seed, and they use it every year, and they make their bread out of it, which is beautiful bread that's made on stones and coals, and it's delicious. You know, so it's not only taking olive groves, it's taking land. It's providing the people. Putres and three of the surrounding communities are going to be encircled by the wall, kind of like Kokilia has been. And what's going to happen is there's only going to be one entrance in and out of the whole wall for these four villages. And, of course, there is no hospitals inside these four towns. There's very few jobs. There's no universities. So for students, for employees, for people that need to go to the hospital, there's going to be no exit except for this one gate. So there's only going to be one gate that will allow entrance and exit to this community, these communities. And so that means if you have to go to the hospital, it's up to the Israeli military personnel at the gate if you'll be allowed to go to the hospital. We heard a story about a woman in Deir Balut, which is another rural village that has a checkpoint right outside the village. She was in labor, and she had to get to a hospital, and they got there, and the ambulance was waiting on the other side of the checkpoint, and the military said, no, you can't go through. And she said, I have to go to the hospital. I'm having children. I'm having a baby. And they made her have deliver on cement next to the checkpoint. We are told that the soldiers came and lifted up her blankets while she was in labor, totally violating her space, not to mention would have let her get to the ambulance. And she delivered twins and two children, and they died an hour later. So this is what the occupation is doing. I mean, it's totally absurd. Here in Budros, soldiers have arrested people for crimes such as resisting the wall, for housing internationals and Israelis, for speaking on the loudspeaker at demonstrations. So even people that are resisting nonviolently, the whole community is totally committed to nonviolent acts of resistance, such as demonstrations, such as planting olive trees where the wall has already, where the bulldozers have already torn down trees to make way for the wall. So replanting trees is now seen as a crime. Olive trees that has been there for generations. So it's a crazy situation.
Do you see a lot of annexation of resources other than the land? I mean, are there water wells at issue in these villages in terms of people's sustenance and basic needs that are being appropriated by the Israeli occupation forces?
All of the water resources are in control of the Israeli government. I don't have the statistics right in front of me, but I think it's about, I can't even say. I don't know what the statistics are, but the Israeli government, the Israelis can basically use as much water as they want for much cheaper prices, and Palestinians, you know, have water shortages quite often, can't use water, even though most of the wells actually lie underneath Palestinian land. The Israelis control all of the use of the water, and Palestinians are having to pay the Israeli government to actually use the water that's on their own land.
In terms of the checkpoints and in terms of the mobility of people, what is the contrast between how mobile you as internationals are and how mobile the Palestinians in general are?
Well, it's definitely a lot easier for internationals to get through checkpoints than Palestinians. I mean, Palestinians, you know, might have to wait at a checkpoint for hours and hours, quite often are denied entry. And it's also, you know, you would try to avoid checkpoints here. So avoiding checkpoints can mean taking a road that totally goes out of the way and is going to take you five times as long to get to your destination as it normally should if the checkpoint wasn't there. But I do have to say it's actually getting, it has been a little difficult for internationals, especially internationals associated with International Solidarity Movement or the International Women's Peace Service, the IWPS, because the military knows what these groups are doing. Actually, the other day at a checkpoint, they asked me if I was part of ISM and, you know, but obviously Palestinians have a much harder time. Some Palestinians know they can't leave their village because if they actually had to show their ID card to a military official, they might be wanted, you know, for being politically active or whatever. You know, it's almost impossible to meet a man here in Palestine that hasn't been in jail. You know, a lot of them avoid checkpoints to make sure they they won't end up in jail for no reason at all, really, for no reason. So, yeah, the checkpoints, they don't only stop people from getting through, but they also stop Palestinian agricultural products or all kind of products from getting to markets. I mean, basically, the whole Palestinian economy is at a standstill because of this occupation. As a farmer coming from the beautiful state of Vermont, and having access to land and having access to markets, it's totally disheartening to come to a place where people who have been farming for hundreds of years are now having their olive trees taken away, uprooted in front of their own faces, being held at gunpoint for trying to stay on their land. And it's something we all need to really struggle for, because what is going on here is a complete occupation and complete psychological, not just physical warfare, but psychological warfare. The Israeli government, funded by the U.S. government, is taking the soul away of the people here, and it needs to end.
Okay.
Hi.
Hello, Hillary. Welcome to Free Radio Burlington. And
Thank you.
Oh, no problem. First off, Sarah touched on a lot on the effects of the wall on some of the farmers in the villages that you've visited. I heard last night from you folks that there was a celebration for someone in the village who had just been released from prison, and I wondered if you could talk about that a little bit.
Well, he's known around here as Abu Ahmed, and he is a community leader here. He's one of many people, actually, who spent a lot of time in prison during the first Intifada. And last week, about 2 days before a demonstration that the people of Boudreaux organized, he and two of his brothers were arrested. He was actually arrested in the middle of the night, which is common here. Arrests aren't dignified in any way. You know, it's meant to totally humiliate people in front of their families and in front of their communities. So he was arrested, and his charges were hosting internationals at his home, speaking into a bullhorn, and throwing rocks. Incidentally, he didn't actually throw any rocks, but the first two accusations were true. But, you know, I find this really interesting because while the state of Israel is launching this very violent attack against violent resistance, they're essentially trying to criminalize any kind of non-violent resistance, you know? You know, they're making it illegal for, or trying to make it illegal for people to resist the very thing that's destroying their lives and their cultures. So essentially, you know, denying the fight for any kind of dignity or livelihood. But the court ruled that, they had no standing, and he was released yesterday after a very successful and peaceful demonstration here in Boudreaux. So yesterday was a wonderful, wonderful day full of there were about 300 people, like 20 Israeli anarchists, and probably about, 30 people from all over the world, and about maybe 250 people from Boudreaux and the neighboring villages. And we were the Rabbis for Human Rights, which is an Israeli group, donated 500 olive trees. And so we all carried olive trees down to the swath where the wall was supposed to be built. And we planted olive trees exactly where other olive trees have been destroyed in the past. The march ended peacefully. We left on our own terms and came back to the village. And a few hours later, Abu Ahmed returned. And it was such an emotional day. You know, we went to his parents' home, and everybody was crying and hugging and kissing. And it was really beautiful to see him reunited with his village. And it was, you know, very triumphant. So it gives us all hope for...
In my mind, there's a lot of questions. Obviously, it's very hard to put yourself in the position of actually being there and seeing the actual state of affairs and you know what people are faced with on a day-to-day basis in their existence. But it often sounds like, at least from your words, is that there is, even though it's constantly being sort of dashed by the occupation, there is a really resilient spirit of resistance in a positive sense.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's something that we've been looking for, and it's actually, to be honest with you, not always evident. You know, the Palestinians have been fighting with everything they have for so many years, and honestly, a lot of people are just exhausted. It's just impossible to measure the detrimental effect psychologically, as Farah was saying, on the Palestinians. And some people really have, I think, are losing any kind of hope. And so I think that's what is so exciting about Boudreaux, is because they really, for some reason, have managed to hang on to the spirit. And I think that's where we as internationals and the international community really come in, because at this point, I mean, we were talking about the Intifada and the current state of the Intifada and resistance yesterday, and our friend Ahmed said, you know, that the Israelis have really chosen an opportune time to build the wall. You know, the morale is pretty low here, and the wall can only serve to isolate people further. And so that's why it's really, really crucial right now for the international community to support the struggle here. Because it's obvious why some people are really turning to acts of desperation, because there aren't many choices left. So I'm really glad that we found Boudreaux, because hopefully their message can be shared with the rest of Palestine, and that spirit can be continued.
Do you have any instances that you would like to relate, or things that you saw, or people that you met that you feel have something to say that people don't normally hear in news reports? Oftentimes we don't hear much about the Palestinians at all, except when radical, aggressive events happen. Is there anyone or even anything that you thought was interesting that would shed light on what people are thinking?
Yeah, I mean, when I say that Palestinians are tired, I mean that in the way that, how they're sort of fighting or continuing the Intifada, but, specifically in that regard. But to be here is just, the people here are so, so infinitely wonderful, and it's really tragic to know that this is what, you know, that what you sort of described is what so many people think of as Palestinian. The reception that we've gotten as Americans, you know, as citizens of the country that's really funding this oppression, they're so open to us. Like, everywhere we go, we hear Ahlan wa Sahlan, which means welcome, and we've just been greeted so warmly everywhere we go, and these people are peaceful. They're people of the land. They're sharing people, and it's such a joy to get to know every one of them. And I hope that we can communicate that and sort of justify everything that we've heard, because I think that is really important, that we can humanize these people that have been so, you know, portrayed as villains and terrorists. You know, it's utterly absurd when you actually come here and meet them. So we hope to share more stories of that in the coming days.
The other thing I wanted to ask was communication. Obviously, with the wall and with all the checkpoints and everything, it's extremely difficult for people to talk to one another.
Well, the cell phone revolution has certainly served Palestine well. It seems, you know, people are in communication in that way. But we meet people a lot who live maybe a half hour, an hour away from each other, who literally haven't seen each other in like 3 or 4 years. Basically since the Al-Aqsa Intifada began, and the Israeli military really sort of began tightening any kind of free movement here. Our friend Basma is from Gaza City, and she now lives in Ramallah and is studying at Bir Zeid University. And her mother can travel from Gaza City to Spain to see her son's wedding. But she couldn't get to Ramallah to visit Basma, our friend. And Basma can't get to Gaza City to visit her mother. She can't leave the city of Ramallah at all. And she's chosen to stay there because, you know, studying is really important to her. And then a month ago, her dorm was demolished by Israeli soldiers. So another family that we met in Pulkaram, whose son Ayman actually lives in Essex. Ayman's sister lives in Nablus, and in order to see her family, she hadn't seen her family in Pulkaram for 2 years, and in order to get there, she hired an ambulance and said she needed to go to the hospital with her children. And that's how they managed to get through the checkpoint to see her family after 2 years. So it's really, you know, people can talk to each other, but as far as staying, I mean, living and being with their family and getting to their land, I mean, movement is totally restricted, not only with checkpoints, but roadblocks, ditches. There's roving checkpoints that can set up at any time that, you know, you have no idea about, and it just completely stalls any kind of movement or planning for Palestinians at all.
Okay. Do you have any other thoughts that you want to share while you have a chance to with people of Burlington?
Sure. There's one thing that I've been thinking about a lot that really struck me right when I first actually got to Tel Aviv. And I keep telling people about it. I just told someone about it 5 minutes ago. So I'll tell you, since you're listening. But we were talking sort of about this effect that the occupation has had on the Palestinian people. And I was reminded by a friend that I made in Tel Aviv. And she was saying how the occupation is really just destroying the Israeli culture as well. That the kind of militarism and aggression and then the fear that's been sort of imposed on Israelis is really sort of distorted them, and even amongst the peace movement, which you might think is sort of could possibly escape that, has been affected as well. That she's in her mind, really, the occupation was psychologically destroying not only the Palestinians but the Israelis as well. And I thought that was really interesting, you know, because it sometimes could be easy to sort of point the finger at Israelis, but I think I think that we should remember, too, how the occupation is, it's not only destroying Palestine, you know, it's really compromising people that live in Israel as well. And so, I don't know, the situation, it can be really demoralizing to think about that as well. But again, just sort of the need to call attention to it and to look at all sides, and that by ending this occupation, helping Palestinians, but Israelis as well. Sarah has one more thing to add for the radio, okay? We totally appreciate being able to talk to you and communicate with you. It's really a pretty profound experience for us, and it's really helpful to know that you all are listening. So we look forward to coming home and sharing more.
Love to you both. Radio. And then I guess Sarah, come back again?
Yep, here she is.
Okay, thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
I wanted to share one more story, and that is the other night, Hillary and I, the night before the demonstration, people were very worried that the next village leaders would be arrested, because the last week, you know, the night before the demonstration, one of the most respected people, Abu Ahmed, was arrested. Literally the night before the demonstration, in the middle of the night. So everyone was really fearful that our really close friend now, Ahmed, was going to be arrested. So he didn't sleep in his house that night for fear that he would be arrested. He slept in his brother's house. And so Hillary and I slept with his wife at their house. And, you know, watching them say goodbye and knowing that they might not see each other for months and months, or maybe even years, if he got taken away to jail for the simple reason of resisting the occupation and resisting the wall, was really, really hard to watch, because we had, you know, they had no idea if they were going to see each other in the morning. And just laying there next to her, we were sleeping in the same room with his wife, and laying there and listening to every noise outside and being scared and just thinking that, God, we're living this just for a few hours, and people here in Palestine live with this reality all the time. Soldiers entering the community here in Boudreaux daily. And thankfully, he wasn't arrested, and later the next day we found out that his wife was pregnant, and he told us the next day, which was even more meaningful, that, oh my gosh, it was their first child, and maybe he wasn't going to be able to see his child born, but luckily he wasn't arrested. And, you know, we said, well, are you so, you know, congratulations, because we had been talking to him that he really wants to have children, and so does Nawal, his wife. You know, he said, honestly, right now I'm more scared than happy, because I'm really scared to bring a child into this situation. And it really almost brought me to tears, because him and his wife are two of the most amazing people I've met here so far in Palestine, and will be excellent parents, but of course they don't want to subject any more human beings to the kind of life they have to live. And I just think we should all think about that, how lucky we are to people in Vermont, how easy we have it, and what a good life we have. And hopefully we'll continue the resistance against the occupation here in Palestine, and of course the occupation in Iraq. And I have to say that the people here in Palestine are some of the most generous people I've ever met. I mean, so generous beyond belief, like living economically poor lives, having few resources, and demanding that we drink coffee and tea on the spot all the time, and just welcoming us into their homes. It's been a real joy to be here to meet the people. So, Vermont, I can't wait to see you. The only thing I really I look forward to seeing everyone, but especially being away from the cigarette smoke. That's the next campaign. We got to get Palestine to quit smoking. I tell you, that's the after the wall's done and the occupation, we're going to get people to quit smoking. Well, thanks, Free Radio, and hopefully you'd like to hear what we had to say.